You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, October 2nd, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. You know what that means. Cliff Schechter will be here with us. Also on the program, the inimitable Andy Kindler, who will be joining us. And actually, I believe he's out of the country. I wonder what that's about. Also on the program today, another mass shooting in Oregon. The president reacts in anger. The usual suspects tweet out their condolences. People shake their heads, and nothing will happen. Meanwhile, the government does not shut down. Planned Parenthood continues its funding. And Jason Chaffetz, apparently, is still running around looking for that, that part of him that got smacked around in that hearing.
Yeah, I did use that chart, and it was fine. I was okay with it.
Apparently, the Pope may have met with Kim Davis, but not necessarily knowing he was meeting with Kim Davis. The Pope had got a blindsided, maybe. Also on the program today this is going to be an interesting month for the campaign. We will talk about this with Cliff. And Bernie Sanders just came out with his fundraising tallies, and they were massive. Really massive. And we will talk about that. But this month is going to be it's going to be kinetic. Let's put it that way. We have the debate coming up in just 10 days from now. There is a 50% chance I will be credentialed and will be in the debate, not actually on the debate stage, although I may pull a Baba Booey. jump up on stage, just yell out Baba Booey, and then get escorted.
Sam Cedar's the king of all alternative media. Baba Booey, Baba Booey. Yeah.
Which also reminds me, I want to do a shout out to the king of earned media. But I can't remember his name now. But he did put me in a YouTube video, I think it was. And I guess I'm ruining it by not saying his name. But it was it's Palooka.
Chris Lapko. Lapico.
Chris Lapa. Lapa Lapico. I'm trying to get like some hook. So
Chris
he uses
Lapa,
it
Lapico,
over and over again.
The king of Earns Media.
There's a 50% chance that I will be credentialed for that debate. I don't know. Maybe the percentage is higher. I just don't know. We've applied. I was headed to Vegas, as you know, for that annual or biannual, twice annual tort conference that I attend, which should also be really interesting this year. But the debate turned out to be in Vegas, and so I decided to go a day early. Why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this both for two reasons. One, to express that between the debate and Hillary Clinton's hearings about Benghazi 10 days later, which now I think are going to be slightly different than the Republicans thought they would be a week ago. It's going to be a very dynamic time for what happens in the Democratic race. I mean, it's October now, folks, and we're starting to get a, you know, we're only 3 months away from the first primary, well, 4 months, I guess, election. And so things are starting to heat up a little bit. I'm also telling you this because we're going to be the show is going to be a little bit sporadic over the next couple of weeks. Not that sporadic. I mean, relative to any other show, it's still a wealth of riches. We may take one more tech day next week. We took a tech day yesterday, and the following week, one day will be travel, and then there will be the final Matt and Mike Monday, but it will be held on a Tuesday. And that will be Tuesday the 13th, the day of the debate. And then at that night, I will hopefully try and do either a live wrap-up or whatnot that will be posted on Wednesday. But I'm burying the lead. Why is it going to be the final Matt and Mike Monday on a Tuesday? Is it because I will never let them do it on another day besides Monday? No, that's not it. Matt, do you want to tell people why it will be your final Matt and Mike? You have one Monday, so Monday will be the final Matt and Mike Monday on a Monday, and then the following week will be the final Matt and Mike Monday on a Tuesday forever.
Yes.
On any day, probably. Probably. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, do you really?
Who knows?
Wait, why don't you tell us why?
Okay, well, members already know, which is one of the many benefits of becoming a member of this
show. Right, they hear bad news first.
Yes, and about my personal life first.
Right.
I will be leaving the Majority Report after 4.5 years of working for this wonderful program with these wonderful people.
Hey, and, what happened?
And I will be leaving because I'm going to work for a new startup website that's not yet launched.
Oh, man. Good luck with that.
It's going to be a political news website, and it's going to be funny. And I will let you know more soon.
All right.
Before I leave, you will know where I'm going.
You'll know more. You'll know more.
Going to miss you. Can I just give a moment
of saccharine? No, now's not the time for the saccharine.
Well, no, just a little bit full on.
That final,
Matt
and Mike Monday on a Tuesday, we could just spend the whole episode talking about me.
No, by that time, what did you say?
We could spend the whole episode talking about me.
Well, no, by that time, just get out. Just leave.
Yeah, we will have more time to bury you, probably the next Friday, a week from today.
Yeah,
but I just
want to
give people
another
a heads up because this is a small operation. You know, it's one thing to, if Michael was sick or went on vacation for a week, obviously we could continue going as if almost nothing happened. But when Matt, without Matt here, all of a sudden we need, how are we going to get the show done? And now who's going to post it? And who's going to correct the fact that there's no post on the blog? Or who's going to come in? Who's going to come in at their scheduled time when they come in? I mean, all of those questions need to be answered. So we are. The reason why I want to make the point now is that we're also looking to fill at least one position. And we're looking, you know, basically, you know, this is – you're not going to become a millionaire here, any of us, sadly. So, you know, generally this is an entry-level position. You need to be able to come into the office, right? You need to be local. If you are interested or you know somebody who'll be interested, a recent college grad, high school grad who's a whiz at computers, audio or video, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will send you a link to an application page. And, you know, so we're, all of this happened in the midst of our big move to upgrade our video thing. I'm not saying it's really inconvenient for Matt to do this. It was also sort of rude for him to go off and have a child when he did. Nevertheless, come on. Apparently, whatever. I don't even want to get into the whole kids thing. So, we're going to be taking a day or two more than we normally would over the course of the next couple of weeks so that we can make sure that, we get staffed up and that we make these changes that we wanted to make. And that's it. I just wanted to let you guys know. And it is a little suspect. Matt has a kid. Then all of a sudden, thanks for all the kid presents, and then just takes off. Pretty clever. And so next up, Michael's going to try and do the same thing, I guess.
Well, I told you how I was hoping, that I'd be able to be like, don't worry, Ezra, Mr. Cedar will take care of us. But that didn't really.
That's right. Yeah, it was like Tiny Tim. It was like Tiny Tim. And so.
Sam is Scrooge.
That's right. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You should have seen me when Matt came in for like a Yom Kippur bonus. And I was just like, no way. Eid, of course, we gave him a huge bonus.
Sam took out the Indiegogo money in cash just to rain it down on himself, and then he put it back in the bank.
That's right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the great Cliff Schechter. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Cedar, the Majority Report. Matt has already all but left the building, forgetting that when Cliff Schechter is on, we always, always greet him thusly.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. Want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter. Cliff, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Samuel, for having me on. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I mean, I almost feel like we could, on days like this, that we could practically just replay maybe literally a half dozen other episodes of this show. We've been doing it for, you know, 4 years. I think you've been regular on the show for about four and a half years, almost the entire show. And it seems like, I don't know, three or four, five times a year, there is a mass killing that takes place either on the day of the show, on the night before the show that you come on that week. And this is another one. This is the this is apparently the 294th. I don't know, mass shooting or in the United States, or maybe that's the shootings, I guess. I'm not sure. That's from the Boston Globe.
Well, it's the 45th this year, I think that was the number. So we're good for about one a week. And yeah, you know, look, there gets to be a point where, I mean, I was pissed off as hell yesterday. I still am. I don't think that in our politics you can find a more direct relationship between, and to his credit, Senator Chris Murphy tweeted this out, and I think he's made a statement along these lines. Obviously, he's Connecticut, and Newtown was there. That there, you know, that there. At what point, essentially, are these guys in the Senate and the House culpable? And I'd say they are at this point. I mean, I would literally say there's blood on their hands, because there's no question here. This isn't a difficult relationship. If you have a functioning cerebrum, you can look at every other country like us and see that this stuff never happens. And if it does, it's like once every 2 or 3 or 5 years. Or, you know, if you have a functioning brain, you can look at Australia that had one a year leading up to the Port Arthur massacre. And we've talked about this God knows how many times before in 96. And since they passed their gun laws there after that, reacting to that the way normal countries react when their innocents are gunned down, they haven't had one mass shooting. But, you know, we're at a point now where we only cover stuff like this. You know what I mean? A mass shooting is either four people being killed or injured, is the definition the FBI uses. And you don't even know, most people don't even know about most of those that go on. Because if it's some lunatic who is angry at his ex-wife or something and goes home and because of it shoots his wife and his kids and himself, often we don't even hear about that. Because that's not a big enough tragedy anymore in America. That's sort of run of the mill. We only hear about if it's double digits who are killed on a campus, or if it's people who are shot actually on live TV who are newscasters, because that's a sensational type thing. That's the only time we hear about it now. But I mean, it's, you know, I don't think there's any more obvious case of where we know what works because everybody else has done it and it's worked for all of them. Will you eliminate every firearm death? No. Will we ever get to a point of where we have firearm deaths go down to the level of, let's say, a Japan or so, which has like, what, half our population almost and had something like three people shot and killed last year? Just think about that for a second. No, because they, you know, nobody has a right to a handgun and they make it almost impossible. And that's going to be a very difficult thing to achieve in this country. But there's, you know, you hear about background checks all the time and assault weapons ban, but there's a good 20, 25 other pretty serious reforms and pretty, you know, things we could do. Some of the things like what California is doing, where there can be a restraining order against somebody while if their family knows they may commit an act of violence, where they take their guns away, things like that, that every other sane country has, or doing a psychological profile of somebody in addition to a background check, which every other sane country does, and talking to people who know them. You know what I mean? And, you know, all these additional things that if you made people have to jump through all these hoops, we certainly could get to the level of gun violence per capita that Canada is at, which Canada is still, like us, has guns. People have a lot of hunting rifles in people's homes, things of that sort. But they have made it very difficult for you to be able to, I mean, they banned anything and all the crazy weapons. And for you to get a handgun, you really have to jump through a bunch of hoops to prove that you're not somebody who is mentally unstable. You aren't a criminal. You aren't going to commit an act of domestic violence. You know, the people who know you can vouch for you, that kind of stuff. You're not going to find a gun in a bathroom stall because some idiot just left it there because they also have laws about reporting lost and stolen guns, which about 80 or 90% of people support in this country, but the NRA purposely fights against because of a small percentage of gun dealers who essentially are criminals, like having guns magically lost out the back door, which they can charge God knows how much money for. You know, stuff like that. I mean, again, we're not trying. We've allowed the NRA to fight a 20-year war against the ATF, which is the organization that, you know, is tasked with dealing with this. We've let them call them all sorts of names. We've let them cut their funding. We've let them not share data to show where shootings have happened, for them to be able to build patterns and relationships and stop some of this from happening. They wouldn't even let somebody run the damn organization for 7 years.
Right.
They would not put anybody in. And we had to literally force that through the Senate, and, you know, by taking a majority. I'm just saying, I mean, it is ludicrous. And anybody who really, you know, thought about this at all would take a look at our country, as every other country does, and say, it's not that they're just not doing a great job. It's not that they've tried everything. They're not even trying. They don't care. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what it comes down to. We have politicians who are complicit in this, because this is obvious, you know, and that's what makes it, I think, for me so visceral and so sickening, because rarely is there something where you see as direct a relationship. They don't pass law A, person B dies. I mean, it's just that direct.
I think, look, you know, I think you make a really good point, which is, it's not just that, you know, we can argue, people can argue about the efficacy of law A or law B or whatnot. But at the end of the day, this is not an argument about efficacy. This is an argument, and certainly, gun laws have lapsed in this country at different times, right? So this is not an argument about efficacy. This is an argument as to whether or not there's a will to do anything. Cliff, let's listen to President Obama came out and gave a, I don't know if it's a press conference, really, like a short impromptu.
Pretty passionate
and it seemed
speech.
Very passionate. Yeah. It seemed more or less, I don't know, off the cuff, at least on some level. This is his response to the shooting in Roseburg, Oregon, at Umpqua Community College. 9 victims. The perpetrator was ultimately killed. The gunman ultimately killed. 7 injured. And here is President Obama addressing that. This is number one.
But as I said just a few months ago, and I said a few months before that, and I said each time we see one of these mass shootings, our thoughts and prayers are not enough. It's not enough. It does not capture the heartache and grief and anger that we should feel. And it does nothing to prevent this carnage from being inflicted someplace else in America. Next week, or a couple of months from now. We don't yet know why this individual did what he did. And it's fair to say that anybody who does this has a sickness in their minds, regardless of what they think their motivations may be. But we are not the only country on earth that has people with mental illnesses or want to do harm to other people. We are the only advanced country on earth that sees these kinds of mass shootings every few months.
So there he is. I mean, he is basically expressing, you know, the idea that you were expressing, Cliff, which is that we're not even trying anymore. There's
right.
not even, I mean, there's some empty platitudes, but as a country, we're not trying to address this problem, which is clearly not going away and is in fact growing. And, you know, later in the speech, he also compares it to the billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. He doesn't say it explicitly, but also the rollback in our civil liberties that we've been engaged in since 9/11 in terms, and not to mention the wars, right? Ostensibly to protect us from terrorism. And we spend all that effort on that. But as far as something that actually on a daily, week in, week out basis, year in, year out basis, kills Americans, in much the same way, right? A random, completely random civilian in the most sort of benign settings kills more Americans. We do absolutely nothing.
And people are at so much more of a risk from this happening than terrorism, which President Obama also mentioned. And some people then looked and compared the graphs, which, I mean, you can barely have the lines on the same chart. There's so much more gun violence, death. And, you know, the reason why I've said this before, I mean, there's a number of reasons why there's hope on this and why we're headed very much in the right direction. The problem is, you know, when you're headed very much in the right direction on gay marriage, it's terrible, but that means people aren't allowed to get married who are gay during that period of time. They're not allowed to have equality. And in some cases, it may cause some people, I mean, it can cause if you can't get health care because you don't have your partner's benefits. I'm not saying there can't be terrible effects of it, and it can even cause some people to die. But in this case, the direct relationship is, while we are passing these laws, while Washington State, you know, passes universal background checks as they did on their, you know, on by ballot initiative last time, and Oregon and Oregon, by the way, passed it. It just hadn't taken effect. It just took effect. But they passed it through their legislature, and Delaware passed it through the legislature. And it's going to be on the ballot in Nevada and Maine, among potentially other places coming up in 2016. You know, so there's change going in the right direction. Moms Demand Action has gotten numerous businesses to take guns, to not allow guns in their stores. Well, when you think of all the accidental deaths, all the times when, you know, mom leaves the gun in the purse, the kid takes it out and just randomly starts shooting, or, you know, things like that, or how to know if somebody is a bad person or not, right, because they're carrying a gun and the store doesn't allow it, that saved lives. And it's not to say we're not making change, but the problem with this issue, which I think makes people feel powerless and that things aren't changing, is this is the inevitability, as I've said, you know, numerous times on the show, is that during the 10 years, 20 years, you know, during the period of time it takes, because, again, the group that I worked with, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, that's now Every Town for Gun Safety, got into this in 2006 is when they started. And before that, there was nothing. There's the myth that we lost Congress in 94 because of this issue. Not true, as Paul Waldman, you know, who's now at the Plumb Line and the American Prospect did research to show. In 2000, the myth was that that's why Al Gore lost, even though we know he kind of really won. And you know, again, not this issue that cost him some of those places. Those places were moving in a rightward direction anyhow, West Virginia and some of those areas and a whole number of issues. So, you know, the left completely backed away from this issue. And just, you know, for about 6 years there, which is a really long time if you think about it, nobody right. in the left mentioned this issue except for a few stragglers. And the right was pushing us in a direction of more concealed carry, more open carry, more concealed carry in ridiculous places like bars and in, you know, I mean, you know, in preschools and, you know, all this kind of crazy stuff like that. So really for less than a decade now, there's been any kind of countervailing force. And of course that's been increasing as the Brady campaign, which existed but wasn't doing much then, has jumped back into this more heavily. They were concentrating on the courts for a while there and weren't doing anything politically. And now, you know, they're back into it, and you've got Moms Demand Action, who joined with Every Town, but you've got a grassroots component. You know, 90% of what the NRA tried to push this year, over 90%, it was like 92% in the states, they've lost. All right. They're losing everything now. I mean, one could make an argument and say, well, granted, because they're doing really, really crazy stuff, like trying to put guns in more campuses where they failed almost everywhere. But the point is that, you know, there's a lot going in the right direction, you know, but I guess I keep saying this again and again. The problem is that there's all these loopholes in the meantime, because right. it's great that California and New York and some big states have closed all this stuff, and that's a large percentage of American people. But when you've got places like Texas and Florida, you know, and virtually every small state that isn't doing anything, you know, this is what happens.
Well, I think the idea that you have large retail outlets that are beginning to actually feel the public pressure, okay, on this. I mean, and I have to say that, you know, I don't know. The president is clearly frustrated in this. We got one more clip here. And but what I think was really important about what he said in this speech, this impromptu speech, was this notion of it should be politicized, because then there is like room and there becomes sort of a narrative of like it is legitimate to go out. And of course it is. And it's something that we've been saying, obviously, for years. But this is what politics is. You have a problem in society and you say, we want to change the laws so that we don't have this problem anymore. We want to change the laws to address this problem. It's not that this problem is an opportunity to say, to push some other agenda. The agenda here is to deal with this problem. Let's hear the president say this. And you know, hopefully it was really interesting to me, too, because at one point in this address, he basically challenged the media, put up these facts and figures. I'm not going to announce them. You put them up, because if I say it, it's going to be something, you know, Obama says this. You put it up. And I think we're going to see the media do that. I mean, it was an interesting tactic by Obama. But let's hear Obama say, now is exactly the time when we get political about this.
And of course, what's also routine is that somebody somewhere will comment and say, Obama politicized this issue. Well, this is something we should politicize.
1-5, 1-5.
It is relevant to our common life together, to the body politic. I would ask news organizations, because I won't put these facts forward, have news organizations tally up the number of Americans who've been killed through terrorist attacks over the last decade and the number of Americans who've been killed by gun violence. And post those side by side on your news reports. This won't be information coming from me. It will be coming from you. We spend over $1 trillion and pass countless laws and devote entire agencies to preventing terrorist attacks on our soil, and rightfully so. And yet, we have a Congress that explicitly blocks us from even collecting data on how we could potentially reduce gun deaths. How can that be?
So, there you have the president basically doing, you know, I think what he feels he can do at this point, which is to just try and use his access to the media in some way of like, you know, creating a narrative. What's also really interesting to me is that,
say your point, and then I want to say one thing before I forget after that.
That there have been now calls from people like there are like center right people, like this should be an issue in the debate, and it's going to be brought up. It's going to be, there's no doubt in my mind, it's going to be brought up in the Democratic debate, right? Because this is just a low hanging piece of fruit for a journalist to say to Bernie Sanders, who has been very much in many respects voted the NRA line, coming from Vermont in many respects. I don't know where he is on specific gun control. You know better than I would. So
you're going to
see this come up in that debate, and it only makes sense that you would see it in the Republican debate as a way of starting to juxtapose these things. Say what you want, and then I want to transition to sort of that dynamic, actually.
Yep. Well, I'll say quickly, when it comes to Bernie, the biggest problem right now with Bernie, more recently, he was against the Brady bill in the past. I mean, he was bad. I mean, there's no way to defend his record in the past. It was very bad. More recently, he supported the bill that got a majority of the Senate after Newtown, and he's been good. But the biggest problem, I will honestly say, with him is that is really in the rhetoric. Is, you know, sometimes he still responds, and you and I talked about this on the show before, and really, if he knew how disturbing that was and how much it upset people who are in this community who are victims and survivors and who've lost family members, when he says, oh, you know, somebody could have used a hammer instead of a gun, which, again, is just, you know, for somebody as smart as Bernie, that's a really dumb thing to say.
Right.
I mean, if you can find a way to kill a classroom full of kids with a hammer in a minute, I don't want to say I'd be impressed with you, because that's terrible. level, but you know what I mean.
Right.
It's not possible. And some things like that. He's sort of parroted some of the right-wing rhetoric, and that's what's really upset some of us. And I wish somebody close to him would tell him that and get him to stop doing that, because his votes were correct more recently. But what I wanted to say is the difference here, the disparity that President Obama refers to and what you've been talking about, Sam, sadly, is again, you know, another reminder. You know, I'm just not going to be politically correct about it, because if I am, then I can't tell the truth. And the truth is that it's the priorities of white rural males. That is what's happening here, because the civil liberties they're more than willing to give up are getting on an airplane. First of all, a lot of the types of people we're talking about don't get on airplanes. That's not they're not experiencing that regularly like many other people are, so it's not as big of a problem. But in addition to that, if they are, they know that they're doing it to go after the Muslim guy, so it's okay, right? I mean, that's the way they see it. Whereas, you know, so you can take away any civil liberty you want as long as they assume the people that are really going to suffer are people that don't look like them. And that's what we're talking about here. But with guns, you're actually coming to, you know, you're saying to them, you can't have an assault weapon. And they have the same selfish attitude as they have on so many other things. And I don't want to say this is all white rural males, but it certainly is a majority who just, you know, don't care. It's not happening in their community because nobody, you know, there's more deer living there than people. And in essence, they don't care, and they care that they get to have their toy. So it'd be the same as if essentially we were being ruled by the 10% of, you know, or whatever percent of people it is, whatever small percent. I think we should have absolutely no laws about driving. I mean, that's what we have. That's really in many states what you've got, not nationally and not in a lot of states, but in at least, you know, 15, 20 states, it'd be like if the people who want to be able to drive at any, you know, at any speed, at any time, while drinking, and whatever, they're the ones who are determining the gun laws. The equivalent of those guys are, right, you know, are determining the gun laws in those states. And I'm sorry for just calling it out like it is, but it's mostly white rural and exurban guys. That's who we're talking about.
And the power, for whatever reason, that sort of
well, in Republican primaries, because of gerrymandering and because of states like South Dakota that get as many senators as California, they play a disproportionate role in our politics. They shouldn't have that much power. They are a dwindling majority, or, you know, white people in general are. White male rural types aren't a majority, but they're who shows up. They're the ones who show up in a lot of Republican primaries and gerrymandered districts. They're the ones who show up in places like Utah and South Dakota and Alabama and states that are very rural and don't have near the population of New York or of Illinois or California, but get the same representation. And that's why we are all living with, you know, their thinking on these issues or lack thereof. That's what it is.
All right. Well, I, and again, I think people could probably, you know, go back into our archives, pick out,
find all of this. Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, like, you know, pick every fifth, show that, Cliff has been on over the past, couple of years, and you'll probably find us talking about this issue. And it's, it really is, stunning. And I think, you know, your analysis of it is correct. And it will be interesting. And I want to transition here to a little bit about what has taken place this week in Congress and what's going to happen over the next month and a half, 2 months, because it's going to both involve both Congress and the elections. And that is, we have this past week, the House and the Senate passed a budget. It's really just an extension, but and it sort of remains to be seen what's going to happen when that extension comes up. I think it is in December. But, you know, it comes in the wake of John Boehner resigning. Simultaneously, yep. Or, you know, basically announcing his resignation, I guess I should say. And it also comes simultaneously with these hearings in the House on Planned Parenthood. And we played a couple of clips, I think it was on Wednesday, of the head of Planned Parenthood, Cecile Richards. And her.
My God, what
I
they
mean,
did.
It was unbelievable. I mean,
that should really just be ads for women, particularly running for office on the Democratic side.
Oh,
to
my.
Show what these scumbags did. Again, I have to. Too often, as you just talk about Boehner from my state, Jim Jordan, not from anywhere close to where I live, he's one of those rural white males we're talking about. He's from a completely rural, gerrymandered district in sort of north central Ohio. And he's as stupid and just as inane as it gets. And the way he treated her, and Jason Chaffetz, again, what a shock, from Utah, another rural white
right.
guy. You know, are you seeing a pattern, Sam?
Well, and then there was also the guy from Wisconsin. His name escapes me at the moment.
That's right.
Grothman, who basically said, well, look, I'm a guy, and I have no problem getting health care.
Why would there be a problem with you? I mean, you have all the same parts. Or, oh, wait, right.
I mean,
there's no better statement. I'm glad you brought up to show their attitude on everything, but particularly when it comes to these issues, we're talking about whether it's guns or it's women's health care, abortion rights, birth control. You know, the Grothman idiot can't see past, you know, his own nose. He has no idea. You know, he just knows what it's like for people like him.
I mean, what's sort of stunning to me is that, you know, if these were the Republicans, if this was reversed, I think that we would see a huge ad buy at this point, with just like literally just like 10 seconds from Chaffetz, 10 seconds from this Grothman, 10 seconds from Jordan. I mean, just show this parade of morons, and put it out there. Now, the question is going to be, I mean, is this stuff going to get brought up in the debates, which you would imagine, right? I mean, it drove John Boehner from office. I mean, really, I think to a large extent, we all knew that he wanted to resign, but for Eric Cantor losing. So this was sort of, in a certain inevitability. But nevertheless, this was the final push over the edge. We also heard this week Kevin McCarthy sort of speaking of Congress and the debates and the candidates, I mean, how all this stuff is intersecting. Kevin McCarthy, the new, or I should say, the presumed
likely speaker to be,
is on Sean Hannity's program, and he let the cat out of the bag. I listen, if this is the way it's going to be with Kevin McCarthy, I hope to God he becomes Speaker of the House, because this is going to be this is just going to shower riches upon us. Just listen to this. With the knowledge that Hillary Clinton is scheduled to be in front of this committee in less than 20 days, she's going to be engaging in the first Democratic debate in a week or so, which, you know, again, it's about time. I think when people hear Bernie Sanders and Clinton debate and O'Malley and Chafee and Jim Webb, we're going to hear a debate about ideas and policies all based on a premise that government can do something and government needs to do something in areas that are important to people's lives. And that is going to provide a tremendous contrast. I don't agree with all the opinions that are going to be expressed there. I mean, let's be honest, but this is going to provide a tremendous contrast to what we've been seeing in the Democratic debates. But here's Kevin McCarthy basically undercutting what has been the foundation of Republican governance for literally the past 2 years. I mean, aside from repeated votes to repeal Obamacare, this has been the organizing principle of Republicans. I mean, people forget Mitt Romney thought he was going to win because of Benghazi. And here's Kevin McCarthy basically saying, like, this is what it's really about.
And let me give you one example. Everybody thought Hillary Clinton was unbeatable, right? But we put together a Benghazi special committee, a select committee. What are her numbers today? Her numbers are dropping. Why? Because she's untrustable. But no one would have known any of that had happened had we not
thought
and
made something
that
good. I give you credit for that. I give you credit for sequestration. I'll give you credit.
So there you have it.
You give him credit for starting a politicized committee like everyone, every other one.
Isn't, let's be honest. This isn't just like a normal committee. They had three or four other Benghazi committees. A special select committee has some heft, right? I mean, there's some like historical heft behind that designation. This is supposed to be sort of above partisanship. This is supposed to be, this has, you know, sort of extreme ability, you know, subpoena powers, and it's supposed to have a special standing. And that McCarthy is, I mean, you know, look, we all knew what the game
is. Appropriately named, too.
Right. And McCarthy, right. And McCarthy's here arguing, this is why I deserve the support of Sean Hannity to be Speaker of the House. And arguing this in public, it's just mind blowing.
It should be completely unseemly, but that should let you know where we are. You know, again, these statements, you know, they're a sign of where we are, of the safety he feels in being able to say that in his little comfy, you know, corner on Fox News. And that these guys actually at this point, you know, most of the time they deny it, but here and there they'll be honest. And, you know, Mitch McConnell, you know, saying they wanted to, you know, their top priority was Obama not having a second term and things of that sort. They'll be honest and let you know that the entire act that they're putting on, it's all about power. It's all about politics. It's all about eventual financial gain. It's all about, I mean, they're no longer a real party. And it doesn't mean there aren't people in there who are trying to do the right thing. I will grant there are probably some Republicans in there who have some beliefs they stand up for, certainly locally and other places. But overall, you know, it's ceased to function in the way a normal political party should function. Mm-hmm. Yes, things are always done politically. But I think we'll all remember, as I made a little McCarthy joke, that when the first one stood up, the previous McCarthy, and did his thing in the 1950s, it was among others people like Dwight Eisenhower and Margaret Chase Smith, Republicans, who basically censured him and told him to shut up and sit down eventually. I mean, they let him get away with it for long enough, certainly. But they didn't want to let it get out of hand, you know. But the people like McCarthy, you know, the previous McCarthy, are the ones who run the party now. And so it's become something where there's just, you know, everything is a scam. Everything is about how it will look in the polls, how it will help your primary, you know, how it will set up your speaking tour after you're, you know, you're done on the right-wing lecture circuit. I mean, the reasons are no longer the same. And that's why I think you and I got so frustrated, you know, back in 2008, 2009, you know, well, really 2009, when President Obama came in and really seemed to believe these people had any intention of working with him in any way. And I honestly hope no Democrat will fall for this again and look at this particular party right now. Now, there's some people who are seeing on some issues, you know, on gay marriage and you know, on guns and choice. Mark Kirk is seen on, you know, some of the foreign policy stuff. Rand Paul, although I hate to use the word seen in the same sense, let's say he has seen positions. I'm not saying they are terrible in everything, and when you can work with them, you shouldn't, because you should. But know that they're just a collection of interests now. That's what you're dealing with.
Right.
And so know that if they're going to start any committee, don't allow them to start it. You know, the way Bill Clinton, you know, said, okay, you know, we'll give you a special, you know, you can have the special counsel look into me. No, don't do that anymore. Don't allow them anything. Don't give them anything. Don't hand anything over to them, because they don't do anything for the right reasons anymore. Okay? Everything is about the holding and extending of power. And I just wish that from here on in, if I had a wish in politics, it's that every Democrat would realize that.
And it's also, I mean, and we got to wrap up, and I want to talk, you know, we'll have time next week to talk about this really extraordinary fundraising that Bernie Sanders has done, because it really is changing it's going to change the tenor of the coverage of Bernie Sanders, I think, significantly. But lastly, just, you know, what's really amazing about that moment with McCarthy and Hannity is that even the, you know, like, look, you and I, we would have said the same thing about that committee last week or the week before or before it was built. I mean, we understand that. But they're actually saying it to the people who ostensibly believe that there is a Benghazi conspiracy or of some sort. So even those people who have been beating the drums about Benghazi for years, they just hear that and they're like, yeah, oh, no, of course. They don't even realize that they have been sort of chasing this I don't know, this ghost. I just found it really stunning. But listen, we got to go, Cliff, and we're going to have the opportunity to talk next week. And of course, next week we'll have our opportunity to say goodbye to Matt, who is leaving.
We still get to ever see Matt again?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I don't know about that. I mean, maybe
maybe
we can have like Matt call in.
Is that it, Matt? You know, just
maybe we'll do film
like
recommendations or something like that. We'll bring him in occasionally to do occasional Friday.
Someone needs to recommend good stuff on this show.
Oh,
shots fired!
Boom!
Wow.
And I'll also say,
dude is going out like
it's not inconceivable to me.
Way up.
It's not inconceivable to me that Matt will be in his office listening to the show every day and call in to basically espouse his men's rights activism. Is it anti or is it something that's very?
I thought he was pro men's rights.
He's a huge MRA fan. All right, Cliff Schechter, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, buddy. I'll be in touch. Bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back. Oh, should we play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
Why don't we play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song as the break music?
Okay, let's do that. If we need extra music, we'll do that. Here is Jimmy Reefer Cake song. What is the song?
It's called Where Issa Da Bernie. I think it's a Pope-type themed song.
Where Issa Da Bernie, okay, by the great Jimmy Reefer Cake at allthehypocrisy.com. His weekly, he's back, really. He's really hitting the news well. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll be talking to Andy Kindler.
Hello, everybody. This is the Pope of all presidente candidate. I see only one hope. It may come as a surprise to some of you that the candidate I support is a Jew. Republican primary, full of useless information. Seems like the Bible, I got another translation. They worship at the money, just a look at this chump. The American Berlusconi is a Donald Trump. And on the TV, all that you see is a Trump, 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 Trump,
little bit of Hillary,
Trump, 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 Trump,
Bill Clinton, Fiorina,
Trump, 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 Bush, Fiorina. Where is it, the Bernie? 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 If they shower the Bernie, then everyone may see that the Jew from Vermont agrees with me and get rid of influenza of the bigger money, which is really why all you see is a Trump and a Hillary, because she bought out to buy the bigger money.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. That over the time it took me to call Andy Kindler, we listened to Jimmy Reefer Cake's Pope song, and quite good. It sounded, I have to say, and maybe it's just because I had this on my mind because Andy Kindler, I was ringing him. It sounded a little bit Adam Sandler-ish, but this Jimmy Reefer Cake song celebrates someone who is far superior in all of our minds, comedically, than that I can't even say his name again in the same breath as introducing the person that is introduced by this song.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, Andy Kindler.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man.
Andy Kindler. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I thought you were going to say he sounded like Father Guido Sarducci.
Well, you know, that is true, too, because the Father Guido Sarducci, you know, Michael has been doing a Fox News Pope character that has been dangerously in the Father Guido Sarducci territory. But Michael just looked at me and said, who is that? Which also... It's going to make me cry.
Well, no, seriously, where does that come from?
Oh,
that's Don Novello, and his my favorite thing he did was when he said that he had found the bill for the Last Supper, and it was definitely authentic because, you see, it says shekels. Oh, you kids. Oh, is that too square for you kids? Is that the problem?
Yeah, the young guys, they don't like the shekel jokes. They think that's too old stuff.
Yeah, I tell you, Sam, I hate to dress you down, but a little bit anti-GOP today, I have to say. A little anti-Republican.
Did I express some type of partisan? Did I come off as a little bit not fair and balanced?
It's not like Jake Tapper, who is right down the middle of the plate, baby. You never know. You never know whether he hates Obama or whether he hates Obama. Jake Tapper brings the real news.
Now, this is where it gets really complicated because you're just, you know, you also are renowned to being extremely extremely sensitive about Obama. So,
what'd you say about Obama, Sam? What'd you say? What'd you just say about Obama?
Let me tell you. I think you'll appreciate this. This is the old joke about the shekel thing. When I did the, I don't know if you ever heard about this, but the WBCN in Boston comedy riot back in like 1991, I think it was, or 92. Do you ever know about that? Like, it's Stitches. You used to play Stitches, of course, right?
Oh, no, I was a Knicks guy.
That is a funny joke for probably two people out there that understand the dynamic of those two comedy clubs. But so I did the comedy riot, which is where, like, you know, amateurs go up and get into, like, a comedy competition. And Cam Neely was one of the judges. He was a big Bruins hockey star at the time.
Dennis Leary does like a benefit with him, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did a bit about, making the analogy of when I quit law school to when Jesus told his father Joseph that he was going to become the Messiah. And and Cam Neely on his critique of my bit wrote stuff too old, do stuff that's current.
Oh, you mean like more like Joseph Smith?
Yeah, exactly. Stop doing all the old early the Byzantine period. You got to bring yourself up past the Enlightenment. You're just doing sort of late antiquity jokes.
That is so great.
Oh,
oh man!
But
did you see my war? I'm in a war with Piers Morgan. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, what's going on with that? I'm so surprised because you two just seem like
so great. He normally is so great. Piers Morgan, I'm such a fan, and that's why I'm really disappointed in him. Really? What's this voice? Really, Sam?
That is...
It's like an anti-gay thing I'm doing now.
Well, it's so... That's what happens when Andy Kindler gets even more sensitive.
Hey, nice to see you back in men's clothes. You see, you can't do those jokes anymore, Sam. Drop that bit.
Wait, so tell us what's going on with you and Piers Morgan, because I've always said, you know, it's like you and Piers Morgan are almost like the old saying, you know, right Jewish cast, right Yiddish cast British. I mean, like he could be the Andy. He, you know, if there was the Andy Kindler story, maybe you'd get Piers Morgan to play you.
I think you're so right. That's what makes it disappointing. Here's a guy, and I love, as you know, I love Larry King more than any interviewer in the world. I was very hesitant to embrace Piers Morgan. But when he started to laugh, you know, when him and Ricky Gervais would sit around and laugh like idiots, he started to grow on me.
Yeah.
The guy is so horrible. He's going after 2 seconds after my hero, my God, and my Holy Ghost, President Barack J. Obama.
you use the yes, Juicein.
I use the Donald J. Trump.
Juicein. Okay.
J. Trump.
And so wait.
So
wait.
2 seconds after, he's like, "Shame on you, Obama. You've done nothing for gun control in 6 years." And he doesn't talk that way, but that's what the voice I ascribe.
Right. No, of course. I mean, that's the way he sounds when you read his things. Right. Okay.
And then 3/4 of his stupid tweets are, "Oh, Manchester United, they should fire Wenger. Who cares? I don't know what you're talking about."
And so wait a second. So he
responds to me. That's the beautiful part.
All right. Wait. So no. Wait a second. So you've been going at it with Piers Morgan in a long time, right? I mean, back in what was this in July? I see you like talking.
Oh, he came after me.
So wait a second. So you basically in July you had a tweet where you called him out for bragging about how many times his column on Cecil the Lion Slayer, Dr. Walter Palmer, got read. And you just said, you wrote, which I thought was just more of like an assessment rather than a critique. Piers Morgan, in an effort to capitalize on a tragedy, makes himself look even more despicable than he usually is. That's just an assessment, right?
And also my go-to word, despicable.
So what is it? So you basically are you guys going at it right now?
He came in this morning. He came in this morning and he says, "This is probably..."
Now, when you say he came in this morning, he's not actually coming to your house, is he?
No. Okay. Luckily, he's driving on the wrong side of the road. and this one hurts. I might tear up, but this one really hurt. It was very hard hitting. He says, "Why don't you stop tweeting me, you weirdo?" Now, that hurt. That hurt. Weirdo. That's a little hard. That's a little low.
Did he say weirdo? Obsessive little weirdo. I mean, let's get that on.
Yeah, he added some descriptors. I'm not going to, you know, I tried to soft sell it.
Well, so he's really going after you. Now, that must sting, right? When
it really does hurt. That's hurt.
Because I mean, when he calls you a weirdo, that must really hurt.
Well, he's so gun control, except he lives in Donald Trump's ass. He loves Donald Trump, and he doesn't. I literally don't think he understands how elections or voting works, and how many people you have to get to vote for something.
And you're really going after him. Now, has he blocked you yet, or what?
No, people keep saying, "Why aren't you blocking him?" And I keep saying, and I say to them, "Shh." My reply is, "Shh. This is fun." Stuff like that.
And so you really, I love, I'm
just
going
really,
why don't you stop praising the racist bigot, real Donald Trump, and ignorantly bashing POTUS? Thanks. Now, has he called you an Obama bot? Do you think that's what he was saying when he said, "Stop tweeting about me, you obsessive little weirdo"?
Well, I think that the first time he responded to me, I'm pretty sure he knows from, you know, like when I get bored, I haven't done it recently, but when I get bored, when I got bored recently, I just go to the Donald Trump's Twitter page and then heckle him. Because he said something the other day. He goes, so people are saying about Trump. He's talking about himself. People said Trump did a good, in quotes, Trump did a good job. So I used to go after Gervais a lot. I think he's like friends with Gervais, or who knows? He just is because he went after me then, but he probably doesn't know, have any idea who I am, and is just trying to. He's just pathetic.
Yeah, but I love it. I mean, I you're living the life basically, Andy. That in some ways I sort of feel like. I mean, I guess maybe it's more like sitting around tweeting at people is really the sort of the life I sort of felt like I would have by now. And
that's
I don't,
what I wanted. I don't. That's why I got into this business. It's so great. It's so meaningful what I'm doing. I'm doing the hard work in the trenches, in the digital trenches.
Everybody has a role to play. I mean, back when before Andrew Breitbart died, I think really just to deny me the fun of tormenting on Twitter.
Wait a second. What? Andrew Breitbart died?
You were not.
I know. I just wanted to hear it. that's an old joke.
That's, you know, you're going to get a lot of pushback on that, Andy, from,
he's
the folks
a,
at Breitbart.com.
I would dig Christopher Hitchens up and put him 6 feet down further is what I would do.
Wow. There you go.
That's right. You heard me.
That's actually short of some feathers with some people who listen to us.
Now, look, you know, Andy Kindler taking on dead people. It is...
Hey, Harry Truman, kiss my ass with the second bomb on Nagasaki.
You're really handing it to these people.
You know, when they would ask Harry Truman, they'd say, "Any regrets, Harry?" He would say, "Maybe the second bomb." I could have waited maybe a day, maybe one more day before incinerating more people.
Unbelievable.
I'm pro-Nazi, as you know.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
I'm a Jew for Nazis.
Right. You were the one you wanted. My understanding is, too, that you're still marching in Skokie.
You know what? It's just the anger. I like the anger. I don't. It's just like when people say, "I don't like that Trump is a racist bigot, but I like what he's saying. He's appealing to the people. He's appealing to the real heart of America." The wrong message, maybe.
Right. I have to say that I am I'm enjoying Trump a lot more than you, and I have to say it's because Trump to me is like, you know, there. I don't know what you feel about Howard Stern, and I have to concede.
He's funny. I just haven't listened to him.
In years because I don't have Sirius or XM. But the thing that I always thought that was really fascinating about Howard Stern is he was exploiting people to a certain extent, but they knew what they were doing. You know, I mean, he would actually make it pay off for some people who would come on. And in many respects, he was holding up. He was just basically holding up a mirror. And Donald Trump, I don't think that's his agenda, and I don't think he's as smart, frankly, as Howard Stern, or at least as sensitive to what he's putting out there. But Donald Trump is just functioning as a mirror, and in my mind, and he is showing the country, and it's hard as the media tries not to look that. This is who the Republican Party is really driven by. This is the base of the Republican Party, and they're no longer marginal. They're no longer the fringe. They are really at the heart of the party, and they drive the agenda. And he's showing that by basically making every other candidate in the race, even if they criticize him, basically follow his positions on just about everything, but those that are not sort of conservative orthodoxy when it comes to economics, and that's more even rhetoric because his policies are basically cut taxes anyways. But he said things about universal health care and whatnot that they're afraid to go there. But when it comes to like xenophobia, when it comes to like build a wall, you know, Marco Rubio said, "I'll build a wall. I'll build it underground."
Right.
These guys are just chasing
with a nice door, with an amazing door. An amazing door with a well that you could walk through if you I assume there were some good Mexicans. I assume that there's one or two good Mexicans.
Exactly. Now, you guys...
Hey, I'm sorry. Did that was my impression depressing?
A little bit. But it did remind me that you guys grew up basically in the same neighborhood, right?
Oh, I used to hang out with Trump. Oh, definitely. My dad left me $1 billion. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I went to Wharton.
Did you go to Wharton?
Wharton. I did. But I got to tell you, though, Sam, these weasels, these pundit weasels, and I'm talking about Ron, and I don't know why I even know these names, but Ron W. Fournier, whatever, and Matthew Dowd, the guy who helped get Bush reelected W, and then he's all of a sudden, oh, I'm not like... They're the ones selling it. These pundits are selling it that, oh, Trump, wrong message. But, you know, the country, they're selling that the country is disgusted. And I know you guys are disgusted over there with Obama, but it's not the same. Well, you're not disgusted with Obama. You love Obama like me, but not as much. Hey, Sam, have you heard my Donald Trump? Trump as stand-up comedian. You ready? Here's my Donald Trump as stand-up. This is what he sounds like to me. The world's worst stand-up comedian. Goes, and Marco Rubio's a huge loser. It's true. It's true. It's true. Absolutely true.
This sounds like Bill Maher.
You know, it's funny that you say that because when I was on Hayes' program when they were, you know, I don't know if MSNBC is still like this. I don't think it is. But they were in, you know, 100%, 110% coverage of Donald Trump at all times. And there was one speech that we were watching Trump. It was like a Friday night. And so, you know, maybe it was a slow news night and we were watching it. And I was sitting there and I was like, you know, this guy is just basically doing bad stand up. Like he's you know, the jokes aren't so great, but he's just basically working the crowd and that's all he's doing. Like, hey, how you doing? Hey, what's up? And this guy's a loser. I mean, it was just like, it reminded me of doing sort of low end dinner theater, which I have done back in my career, where, you know, you do these murder mysteries and you just walk around from table to table and you just go like, you know, you put on a bad accent and it's like, how are you? I'm a billionaire and you're a fat one, aren't you? And you move on to the next table. And at the end, they want your autograph because they think they've seen, you know, some like real theater. And that's what Donald Trump really, he's got the cadence too of like a comedian, doesn't he?
Do you remember when he went after Abadie? What's Anthony Weiner's wife? Abadie?
Huma?
Uma, right. And he said, I know for a fact, I just know it, that someone in the car on the way over said, you got to do that bit. You got to do that bit. Because he starts going, hey, yeah, yeah, Eddie Winnie. He calls up, beep, beep, boop, 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 beep, boop, beep, beep, boop, 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 boop. Hello? Oh, very nice. Someone said, that's a great bit. You got to add that to your act.
And he just he dropped it in. Like, he must
be. Maybe it was Roger Wilson, your favorite campaign manager.
Now,
is that his name? Roger Stone?
Roger Stone's no longer with Trump, is my understanding.
I know, but they have different stories of why, and they're both truth tellers, so who knows what the real story is.
Now, Andy, what are you doing in Canada, if I can be so bold? Or should I not? Are you trying
to
keep
that
secret?
Girlfriend. That's pretty heavy.
Are you trying to keep that secret, like where you're going to be performing next?
Well, you say it as if there's no way that I could be an international star.
No. I mean, I know that you are all constantly worried about some type of tragedy at one of your shows where people get crushed as they try and run into the building. And I just wonder, like, do you find that you need to go to foreign countries now?
Do you know how many times, Sam, that they say you're going to have to take three steps back before we bring out Andy? And that's at the small, and that's at the belly room, ladies and gentlemen, of the comedy store. Oh, you guys are not hip. Jesus Christ.
No, you guys don't know.
Pick it up over there.
They don't know what the belly room is around here.
Oh, jeez.
Well, so wait.
Have I petered out?
I don't even know if Father Guido Sarducci is.
I'm asking you a question about where you are. Are you in Canada?
Oh, I forgot the question because of the ADHD. I'm at the JFL 42, which is a comedy festival in Toronto that's been going on for 4 years, and I love Toronto.
Wait a second. This is not the original Just for Laughs.
No, that's in Montreal. This one is an offshoot.
A cheap knockoff.
No. Damn, I told you to say good things.
So you're in Toronto doing the Just for Laughs. I mean, it seems like that's, I mean, are you, do you feel like you might be going to that well one time too often?
You mean comedy?
No.
Well, I'm not funny, like funny ha ha.
Do you do a state of the industry there as well?
Sam, I'm not a trained puppet that they take around to different cities. And they, I like the way I get insulted at a perfectly normal question. No. Look, Sam, I'm not a guy who goes to different cities and performs like a puppet, like Jeff Dunham, your hero.
Right. Well, I mean, Dunham had a shot on, and it's a shame we don't see as much of him.
Told me jalapeno is very funny and it's not racist at all.
What?
You said Ahmed the dead terrorist. That's truth.
Was that his? Those are his characters. To be honest, I have not done
Ahmed the dead.
So wait,
terrorist.
So do you do the state of the industry thing up there in Toronto?
No. It's just regular, just my usual hilarious sets where I leave all my politics to the side and I pander to the audience and a lot of misogynist material, and I have a guy from the audience come up and he puts his hands through my body and I pretend and I have him operate my body. I'm itchy in my crotch area, and that's how it goes.
So who I'm just gonna let that lie there. Who now? Give us a sense. Like, do you see up and coming comedians there? What's the big wave? I mean, who's the next Amy Schumer we should be looking for?
Hey, let me tell you something, Sam. I can order off of the Denny's 55 and over menu. Everybody's up and coming. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, all, yes.
I thought that would be funnier. I knew. I sound like a hack as I was delivering that.
What? What is happening with your career, Andy? I mean, are we going to see you on any TV show?
That's what I just told my manager about. What is happening with? No, I'm doing. What, are you kidding me?
What?
Are you serious?
Well, come on.
I'm on this. I'm on a show called. I'm a recurring character on the voice of Mort. Bob's Burgers. You were in the first episode, weren't you?
Well, to be honest with you, I was in the pilot episode. That's correct, Andy. In fact,
no, this season.
I was in the premiere episode of this season. I've been doing a little more Bob's Burgers this season. I'm not sure.
Can you sound more defensive? Can you sound a little bit more defensive?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I feel like to a certain extent, Hugo is a character that really should have been included in the, you know, I should be a regular. I mean, let's be honest.
You've done a history on Hugo, haven't you? Didn't you do a whole character history?
I did a backstory on Hugo that was pretty extensive for the pilot. you know, to leave that work on the table is a little bit upsetting.
Hey, you know what I like about voiceovers? You can go there in your pajamas.
I actually do like the fact that you don't have to shave.
That is true. Well, you also, you've got you look so handsome. No, that's right. I don't like to shave at all.
So,
I don't know what's wrong with me, Sam. My new thing is I get less funnier as the sentence goes along.
Just as the sentence does.
Yes. Yeah. That's everybody doing is a thing, and okay, let's move it along like that.
And so are you looking forward to the debate? Now, you're an Obama bot, Andy.
He's running again. I'm backing him one more time.
No, next I'm curious. I'm curious, Andy. And you don't have to get explicit. I mean, because obviously you may not have made a decision. But I'm curious. I mean, who are you going to support in the primary, Andy? I mean, where is the Obama?
I am very excited about Hillary Clinton. Oh. I feel she does a good job. She's a straight shooter. I think I'm leaning towards Hillary just because I just don't think Bernie Sanders can win. And I know you don't hate me for saying that. Have you seen James Adomian's video?
You know what? You keep bringing up James Adomian. You're basically, like, literally, Michael is brought to tears. He does, and he did it before James Adomian, I got to tell you. In fact, although I will say this, that I did send an email, I think, at one point to somebody who was complaining about Michael, saying that I was auditioning James Adomian to fill in for Michael, and Michael did not get the joke, sadly. But Michael does a badass Bernie, or what is it? Where are we on this now? Is it Bernie
now it's more him as an actual Maoist revolutionary talking about like re-education camp.
Can I hear some of that?
What we're going to do is we're going to send the petty bourgeoisie to re-education labor camps in Vermont, where they'll tap maple, and everybody who has glasses is done.
No, that's
it's year zero.
Great. That is a great impression.
We need to learn from the Shining Path and what they have done when they've moved the revolution from the peasant agriculture sector to a more urban warfare structure. Revolution comes from the barrel of a gun. And I'm very disappointed to see that obsessive little weirdo, Andy Kindler, is not on board for the revolution.
Oh, Andy, this is bad. This is tough stuff for you because, I mean, here's the thing. You know, you're one of those guys where if you're not on Bernie Sanders' train, you could be the first guy up against the wall.
Are you saying he's rounding up the Jews?
Well, I'm not saying he's rounding up the Jews, but he's certainly keeping tabs on the ones that don't support him.
Counter-revolutionary.
Oh, no, I like him. Oh, no. Don't get me wrong.
Like
don't
is
get
a
me upside down with Bernie Sanders.
Like is a bourgeoisie terminology and construct and counter-revolutionary.
Now, Bernie, I'm being totally honest. I don't really know what socialism with a capital S is. Explain, and I'm very upset because a hardball Chris is concerned about it.
Yeah, hardball Chris has his own matters to worry about, believe me. We burn Holy Cross to the ground, he'll be in it.
Now, Holy there Cross, of course, is, we should be clear. Yeah. When badass Bernie, when the Maoist Bernie says Holy Cross, he's talking about Holy Cross University in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Oops, I know he's doing that. But now, here's the thing, though, Sam. That's an amazing impression, and that's coming out of – that's like – I mean, they both do the voices really well, but James is a different – it's a totally – there's room for both of you.
There's room. I mean, when we do impressions on this show, and really when I say we, I mean Michael, although I occasionally will do something – they are.
You do a Jew. You do a Jew, right?
I do a Jewish.
Bush.
I do like an Andy Kindler. Like, hello, hey guys, what's going on?
Well, that wasn't funny. That wasn't funny.
Why? I get a little funnier as it gets a little slower.
Why? Oh, now I'm doing impressions. That's a good impression, Sam. And people say you don't have a good ear.
Thank you. They're not just good impressions. They politically open up new space. You see that?
It sounds like a commercial for Starkist.
There you go.
They're not looking for impressions that taste good. With good taste. Starkist, ladies and gentlemen, Starkist. Who
Andy, what was the last product placement you did? What was the last voiceover you did, sir?
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
I always have rokeach gefilte fish in the background. Rokeach.
Are you actually...
Why did I go with that? Mistake.
Andy, tell us where you're playing in Toronto, because we have actually an extraordinarily large audience in Toronto. Literally.
Okay, so I am... is that true?
It sounds strange, but we have a lot of Canadians who listen to this program, and I think Toronto is number one in terms of our audience in Canada.
Did you like the way I said that? Is that true?
I know it's, but it is impressive.
No, but I'm hosting the alternative show now. Don't make fun of me for calling it the alternative show. But I called it the alternative show in the '90s,
right?
And I'm hosting that at a place called the Royal Theatre. And I'm also doing Dr. Katz Live.
Oh.
What do I sound like a Jew?
Now, is Benjamin involved in that Dr. Katz Live? He's doing that around, Jonathan. He's going around doing
that. I don't know if he's at this one.
Right.
He
does some of them.
He has been at them.
I know. Janine was doing it down in, like, Philadelphia or something.
And I did one with her, I think, in Bridgetown Festa.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm very.
Now, Andy, before you go, let me ask you this question. When you host or appear on an alternative show, do you wear a leather jacket?
No, what I wear, and I just because I feel comfortable, I still wear an acid wash jacket.
An acid wash?
1989. If I'm not wearing a piano.
Does it have fringe on it? Does it have fringe on it?
It has fringe on. And then my other look is the piano key tie. With the blazer rolled up to the elbows.
I love that. The blazer rolled up to the elbows. Andy Kindler, let me tell you something. It is always a pleasure. I don't care that I had to go through that very strange guy at the front desk of that hotel you're at.
Well, he's watching that. He's got my back, Sam. He's got my back. This was fun. I feel like I was very disappointed in my last appearance. But you know what's weird is I can hear you today, and sometimes I couldn't hear you. So I think the solution is, as Jerry Lewis would say, landline.
Maybe you're right, Andy. Maybe that's what it is.
Why did you tell everybody to be deadly silent during this?
No, segment? I think Matt is getting a little sentimental. Oh, I don't think I told you this. This is Matt.
I heard it when I was listening to this.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Matt is starting to get a little weepy, and Michael is starting to get a little bit shell-shocked that he may actually have to pick up some slack around here.
No. We've already talked about that, obviously. Just be really clear. Contractually. No slack.
Michael's written up his own contract that I have yet to see, but apparently it is incredibly. It speaks of a lot about what his responsibilities are here.
You have shallow pockets over there, don't you?
Oh,
responsibilities
yes.
are not.
They're shallow pockets.
Excuse me.
Michael just sort of meanders in. Oh, is it 10 minutes before showtime? I don't know. Well, oh, okay. All right, whatever. All right, Andy.
Well, that's going to change. Thanks, Sam. I love you. And Matt, good luck with everything.
Thank you, Andy.
Andy,
I
love you too. I hope you really, I wish you the best up in Toronto, Canada.
Well, it sounds like there's an edge to that, but I accept it. I love you, Sam.
All right, talk to you easy, mate. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I think I just told Andy to talk it to you easy, I think is what I said. That was the way I said goodbye to Andy. Talk it to you easy. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half of the program. The number is 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. It's not really a freebie Friday, although you just got an hour and a half. And that's because we had no show yesterday. So for you freebie folks, enjoy. Again today, folks, for you freebie folks, we had an ad for you. I bounced it. I don't give investment advice. There's nothing wrong with that company. I just don't feel comfortable. If I have a chance to use a razor and I think it's good, I'll say, buy this razor. Or, if there's a service that delivers you clothes that you can return, I'll say, buy those clothes. Or if it's a phone service, whatnot. But I just can't bring myself. And even if I thought it was a good investment, and I don't, and it's not that I think it's a bad one, I just don't know. I'm just not going to do that type of thing on this program. With that said, folks, for just pennies a day, if you invest in the Majority Report, the returns will be astronomical and guaranteed. We will guarantee you not just the 40 minutes a day you get now. We guarantee to virtually double, in fact, more than double the amount of time you have available to listen to the program. A good friend of mine told me something the other day, and I wasn't hurt by it, although one might thought that I would have been, but I wasn't, because I actually, this makes total sense to me, and I've contemplated how to address this for a long time, and I haven't figured it out. But he said to me, he's a member of the show. He had, because of his schedule, stopped listening, I don't know, I think regularly like a year ago. And before that, he was listening constantly. And he says, the show is unbelievably tight. And I'm like, has it changed that much? Am I a better interview? And he goes, oh, I don't listen to the interviews. I listen to like literally 1 out of 10 interviews because the interviews are really in depth. And I don't want to do that kind of work. He says, I love the fun half of the program because it's fun and I get my news and it's really fun. And so I usually skip the interviews and go to the thing. And I wasn't hurt at all. I mean, I've told that to people, that there are people who do that that's why they get the member show. It's just the other half of the show. And so when you have a member, membership, you skip the first, I don't know, 40 minutes of the show. If you don't want to hear the interview today, and you get a great show after that. So go to jointhemajorityreport.com, become a member, and also you feel good about yourself because you're supporting the show. which is not to say you should feel bad if you're not supporting the show, although some of you know that maybe you should feel bad. Not saying who, but I think we know who I'm talking about. And Monday will be the final Matt and Mike Monday on a Monday. Folks, don't forget Sportocracy. We're getting great feedback on that program. And if you haven't subscribed, you know, if you don't use iTunes, okay, that's fine. If you use Stitcher, subscribe on Stitcher. But anything that gets us up there in the rankings basically puts it in front of other people who may or may not, who are interested in sports, but not necessarily politics. And so that's hopefully, you know, that show will take off and will become a source of revenue for this program and a way to launch other shows. And so even if you're not a sports fan, first, I would say check it out because I think it may be up your you may like it more than you would think you would. But also, it's really important. Give us a rating. Give us a, you know, subscribe to it. Very, very helpful. All right, folks, 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of this program. You can IM me at Majority FM. The Matt countdown begins. 5 more days. Six more days. 6 more show days, I should say. And that's assuming we don't take one tech day next week, which I'm not convinced that we won't. So it could be 5 after 4 years,
four and a half years.
Crazy. Wow. When Matt first came into this office, it wasn't this office, actually. It was the office at our old place.
That would be pretty amazing if I just walked into this office 4 and a half years ago.
You could barely grow a beard. And now, well...
I could barely grow a beard.
Still barely grow a beard. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after that.